This is Audible.
The Prepper's Guide to Firearms, written by Robert Payne, narrated by Don Barnes of Red Barnes Audio. Introduction. Welcome, reader. You have chosen to arm yourself, a decision that is not to be made without some serious thought. A firearm is a complicated and dangerous tool in the hands of the unprepared, but to those who understand them and handle them carefully, a firearm is a valuable addition to your collection of skills and equipment. In any prepping or survival situation, having a firearm and knowing how to use it will very likely separate the people who survive and thrive from those who don't. You've made an important first step toward protecting yourself and your loved ones. This guide will focus on pistols, as that will be the most likely choice for your average prepper or family. Of course, there are many other options out there, and if you are a more advanced marksman, you will certainly be able to branch out in your firearm selection. But for the ease of this guide and for the average family, preppers, or survivalists, a pistol is going to meet each and every need they have for a firearm. For the beginner, this guide will teach you what you need to know so that you can use your firearm without being a danger to yourself and those around you. Once you have reached that level of basic competence, or if you're already familiar with firearms, this guide will go into some depth on training and use of firearms so that you can continue building your skills. You need to consider a variety of different factors before you choose your firearm, and you will have many tasks and responsibilities to handle once you finally have it. All of these responsibilities are yours, but you have this guide to help you along the way. You'll be led through the consideration, selection, and purchase of a firearm. You will also be introduced to safety, operation, and how to train and employ the weapon so that you can use it effectively and safely. Remember, however, this is only a guide, and it cannot cover every situation. In the end, you are the one who is going to make all the important decisions, from which firearm to choose to whether or not to use deadly force in a tense situation. Should you ever be put to the test, it is a brutally simple pass or fail, live or die evaluation. This guide will not be with you to help you through if and when it happens. It's up to you to train and study the concepts within until you are fully proficient with your weapon. You have to put in the work. That being said, let us begin. Chapter 1. Select a pistol. Budget. Since you've decided to buy a pistol, you need to work out a budget. Not only do you need to set aside money for the weapon itself, but you also need to think of the long-term investment in ammunition and accessories. You will need to be able to buy ammo for regular practice, or you will not have the skill needed to use your pistol when it counts. No amount of quality equipment will make up for that lack of skill. Accessories and spare parts are another expense that you have to include. A good rule of thumb is that if you cannot afford the ammo, then you cannot afford that pistol. Consider that you'll need to be setting ammo aside for later. After a collapse or when you enter a survival situation, you'll not be able to drive to the store and buy the rounds you need. You can only rely on what you already have, as scavenging will not be a reliable source for very long, if at all. A lot of the ammo out there is going to be in the possession of other people, and they're not likely to give it to you unless you are considering incoming fire to be a valid form of ammunition exchange. Make sure you have plenty for your needs, and remember, the more the better, no exceptions. You should have several hundred rounds at minimum, and a few thousand is a much better idea. This may sound like a lot, but consider that over a quarter of a million rounds are fired for every insurgent killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. And that number is coming from highly trained soldiers. For the average Joe, it's going to be a higher ratio still. A lot of that is training requirements, and automatic and suppressive fires burn through ammo much faster than semi-automatic pistol fire, but it does a good job of showing why you need plenty of ammo and plenty of practice. You can go through a full magazine in just a couple seconds with ease. Now, practice will reduce the number of rounds you need to fire to get the job done, but you still want as much as you can get, and you will still need to buy the rounds for which you are training. Magazines are relatively cheap, and you should get enough to last for some time. Magazines will wear out and do not last as long as your pistol will, so you need replacements. The same goes for spare parts. Some pieces wear out faster or are more fragile in general. A broken firing pin, for example, means you now possess a paperweight instead of a pistol. A spare pin fixes all that and lets you keep on going. While you could get a set of machinist tools and all the necessary equipment to fabricate new parts, it is far more economical to simply buy them and store them away for the day you need them. Accessories for your pistol are an additional expense that depends on your personal taste. You can get laser sights, lights, custom grips, laser grips, scopes or optics, and more. If you can think of it, you can probably buy it. The only one that you really need is a set of night sights so that you can still see in the sights in dim light or darkness. Note that I'm not talking about night vision, which can run you thousands of dollars, but basic glowing paint or tritium sights that give off enough light to allow you to align them, even in low light conditions. You have plenty of other accessories from which to choose, but you might consider if another pistol already has that feature you want to add on before you spend the extra money on it. As you can see, budgeting out a pistol is not as simple as it might appear. Until you have your allotment for your pistol, this should be the furthest you go in the guide. Once you have decided how much you can set aside, then it is time to start researching and shopping, not before. This will give you time to make decisions based on careful thought, not impulse and emotion. Chapter 2: Types of Pistols. After you have your budget set, you need to look at the different types of pistols available to you. The four main options are the autoloader, the revolver, the carbine pistol, and the muzzle loader. Within each category are a variety of different pistols that may or may not be similar to the others. Take the time to get a good idea of what is on offer. Not all autoloaders are the same, and the same goes for revolvers. Carbine pistols and muzzle loaders are fairly specific and will not be as distinctive as the other types, but you can still find differences between them. Look at all your options and then make your choice. This is not a decision that you want to rush, so take your time and do your research before you buy. Whatever you pick, be sure it is the best for you. Each pistol will have its own strengths and weaknesses and will fulfill different roles. Do not allow yourself to be convinced to buy something that does not fit your needs, because if it does not suit you, then it is not the best for you, even though it may be an excellent weapon in its own right. If you want something you'll be able to conceal, look for a good concealed carry pistol. If you want to use it for hunting game, look for the best hunting pistol. If you are worried about the fighting and violence after a collapse, look for the best combat pistol. In the end, the pistol that does what you need it to do is the best pistol, no matter what it is. Chapter 3: Revolvers. Revolvers operate exactly as the name suggests. A rotating cylinder with multiple chambers holds a round in each chamber and cycles them to line up with the barrel as the action is cycled. Unlike the other two types of pistols, revolvers do not rely on the round being fired to cycle the action. The revolver is cocked by pulling the hammer to the rear, and when the trigger is pulled, the hammer swings forward to strike the primer and fire the round. Revolvers have one of two types of actions. The single action has one method of operation of the action. Double action has two. Single action revolvers need to be manually cocked each time you fire, as they lack any mechanism to automatically cock the action. Double action pistols will automatically cock the hammer as you pull the trigger, but will require a much stronger pull to get the hammer into place. You can still manually cock a double action, which will relieve some of the heavy trigger weight. When it comes to hunting with a pistol, revolvers are the type typically chosen. They can be carried concealed as an everyday carry pistol. Military and law enforcement have both moved away from revolvers as combat and duty pistols and no longer see service. Hunting is best done with a long-barreled, high-caliber, double-action revolver. You want a large round to put down large game, and many of the larger pistols are chambered with multiple rounds, so you can practice with less expensive ammunition and use the more expensive rounds in the field. As revolvers have no moving parts on the top of the gun, you can mount a scope or other sort of optic, which will let you take game at a respectable range, comparing favorably to shotguns. With the right pistol, you can hunt just about anything living in North America. A revolver can also serve as a backup for a rifle or shotgun, especially if you are hunting in areas with predators such as bears, cougars, or alligators. A long gun is far more awkward than a pistol at close range, and a revolver will allow you to get off more rounds in an emergency. Many people living in rural areas carry a pistol all the time for the purpose of defense against the local wildlife. In case of attack, a revolver can be drawn, aimed, and fired faster than a rifle, and it saves weight and the effort of carrying a hunting rifle with you at all times. Smaller revolvers work well as concealed carry weapons. The simple mechanism allows for a much smaller pistol to be built with some small enough to fit in your hand. Hiding one of these on your person is as simple as could be, as you could fit one in your pants pocket if you wanted. It is hard to notice such a small item when you are intentionally trying to hide it. In summary, revolvers have several advantages over other designs. They have a wide range of cartridges, meaning more options for loads on both ends of the spectrum, large and small. They are mechanically simple and have fewer parts that can break, which also means they are simpler to operate. It does not require nearly as much practice to load and fire as other types of pistols do. The all-metal construction makes it harder to damage them, and they're not as susceptible to extreme heat and cold. Revolvers do have their drawbacks. They are almost entirely made of metal, with the grip being the only part that uses any other materials, so they tend to be heavy for their size. They are more sensitive to obstructions and need more attention when they're being serviced to prevent buildups of dirt, rust, or carbon, which will affect the action. Without constant care, a revolver can easily seize up and become an expensive chunk of steel until you dismantle it and scour it clean. They are harder to shoot than other types of pistols, as they are both heavy in the hand and on the trigger. Trigger pull is an important component of accuracy, and revolving triggers are not very forgiving to the novice. They have by far the smallest capacity among firearms, with the typical cylinder holding a mere 5 to 7 rounds. Chapter 4. Autoloaders. Autoloaders are magazine-fed, semi-automatic pistols that use gas pressure and recoil to cycle the action, extracting and ejecting the spent cartridge and feeding a new round each time the weapon is fired. Magazines are inserted into the bottom of the hand grip magazine well, and the slide is pulled to the rear and then sent forward to feed a round into the chamber. Autoloaders will be either hammer or striker fired, though there is little significant difference between the two designs. Hammer-fired autoloaders will have an external hammer with a double action, allowing it to be fired whether or not the hammer is cocked. After the initial time the pistol is fired, the slide automatically recocks the hammer as it ejects the case. Striker-fired autoloaders have a spring-loaded striker within the slide that is automatically cocked each time the action cycles. Hunting with an autoloader is rare because so few autoloaders are suited to the task. Autoloaders have many options for concealed carry, making them a popular choice. Military and law enforcement made the switch over to autoloaders decades ago as they are a superior service or duty pistol. Using an autoloader for hunting is not advised. The inherent characteristics of these pistols make them unsuitable for hunting. Only a few autoloaders are chambered in a caliber suited for hunting, which drastically limits your choices. The moving slide makes mounting a scope problematic, reducing the range at which you can effectively target game. They are light, which makes the recoil difficult to manage on any reasonable hunting caliber. The only situation in which you would use an autoloader for hunting is as a backup in case of emergency. An autoloader should be chambered with a fairly powerful caliber, with larger calibers preferred, running hollow points or other special ammo to do as much damage as possible, as fast as possible, at medium to close range. This setup can be used for hunting if needs be, but is really intended as a response to an attack. It is direct and brutal, and the goal is to put as many bullets into your attacker and hope that one of them gets something vital or it bleeds out before it can hurt you too badly. Using your pistol this way can be effective, but it is more of a last-ditch resort than anything. Concealed carry is a specialty of autoloaders. A variety of sizes are available to fit the owner. It is easier to fit a larger cartridge in a concealable autoloader, making the shots you have more powerful. They do not require as much material as the other designs, making autoloaders more conceivable across the board. If you want to conceal a pistol on your person, then you need to take into account your size. Shorter and slimmer people are going to have less space in which to hide a pistol. They will have to make sacrifices that a larger person will not. Autoloaders come in a wide variety of sizes to fit your particular needs. They are made as small as a few inches long, and they can still hold a respectable number of rounds in the magazine. An autoloader does not need to sacrifice as much from the caliber to save on size, so a small pistol is able to hold a larger caliber than the other types. A larger caliber is going to require a larger pistol, but autoloaders can manage this much better than other pistol categories. Concealing an autoloader is also made simpler by the narrow construction. Less material means less weight as well, which makes carrying an autoloader a more pleasant prospect. Autoloaders pack more rounds and larger calibers into less space, making them a superior choice for concealed carry. While law enforcement uses the autoloader as their main duty weapon, military personnel carry them as backups for their rifles. Both groups use them the same way, at close range or when they're riding in a vehicle. Autoloaders allow for quick follow-up shots, and the larger magazines allow you to fire a lot of rounds very quickly. If you carry a rifle or a shotgun and it jams or runs out of ammunition at an inopportune time, having a sidearm can be a lifesaver. An autoloader will allow you to fend off an attack until you can get your main weapon back into the fight, buying you some time until you can reload or perform corrective action. Space is tight inside a vehicle, and longer weapons can be hard to handle and aim while you're still in your car or truck. An autoloader can be easily operated with one hand while you operate your vehicle with the other. If someone tries to carjack you, an autoloader can quickly be drawn and fired at your attacker inside the confines of your vehicle. They are also easy to store, as you can fit one just about anywhere in reach. While autoloaders are more complex, they are very well engineered. This means that despite the fact that they have more moving parts than other pistols, they are still very reliable. The parts most prone to wear are easily available as spares, and autoloaders do not seize up as easily as other types of weapons, both among pistols as well as firearms in general. Not cleaning an autoloader is never a good idea, but is less of a problem than with many other weapons. The advantages that autoloaders have are their size and speed. Being smaller than revolvers or carbine pistols makes them easier to carry with you and faster to draw when you need it. Autoloaders can be fired in rapid succession, and they are easier to bring back on target because of their weight, which makes for more time to make accurate shots. They are easier to conceal and do not suffer as many drawbacks from being designed for concealed carry. The drawbacks of autoloaders are their lack of power and range. They have fewer of the large, powerful calibers available, and those that do often sacrifice much. Range is a problem because of the inability to attach a scope to an autoloader and the short distance between the sights. They're designed for close quarters work and suffer when used beyond this. Chapter 5: Carbine Pistols. Carbine pistols are scaled-back versions of full-size carbines or rifles. They're based off of the semi-automatic civilian versions of military rifles such as the M16 or AK-47. The changes in the design involve removing the stock and shortening the barrel to more manageable proportions, although it varies on the weapon being modified. They use a variety of different actions, such as gas piston or gas impingement, depending on the rifle from which it was derived. Carbine pistols are very useful for hunting. They use rifle ammunition, which has far more power and range than comparably sized pistol ammunition. Scopes and optics designed for the larger rifles will fit their smaller counterparts just as well, and the sights that come with carbine pistols are designed to be used at 500 meters or more. The calibers available are enough for almost anything you are likely to come across. You may have problems with the large game as the calibers best suited to hunting them are not suitably loads for carbine pistols. If this is the case, then a carbine pistol should be used only at ranges where you can quickly fire several shots at your prey. Dangerous game is less likely to be a problem because of the magazine size and the fact that you are firing a rifle round. If 20 or 30 rounds cannot bring it down, very little else would likely have been able to, and you should not be hunting it in the first place. Keep these limitations in mind if you plan to use a carbine pistol as your main hunting weapon. A carbine pistol cannot be concealed short of a backpack or a messenger bag, so do not even try. If you need to infiltrate an area without looking like a threat, a carbine pistol can do the trick, as it is more concealable than a full-size rifle, while offering similar firepower. Tuck it into something subdued and carry it right in. Other than that, it simply cannot be done. Any attempt will fail and will draw more attention to you than if you had simply carried it openly. Keep in mind that it will take longer to get to it, as it has to be put away, where you can carry other pistols on your body without anyone knowing. Carbine pistols really shine when they're used as a combat weapon. They are maneuverable in close quarters while still being useful at a distance. Military personnel and bodyguards the world over use weapons very similar to carbine pistols, such as personal defense weapons or submachine guns. In fact, submachine guns have largely been replaced with short-barreled rifles, which is basically the same as a carbine pistol with a stock attached. Note that attaching a stock to your carbine pistol without the proper paperwork and permissions can be a very serious crime, and simply possessing a stock that can attach to a carbine pistol is considered the same as having it attached. Make sure that you are not breaking any laws. If you are worried about heavy fighting, then the carbine pistol is your best option. Realistically, a rifle would be best, but sometimes that is not available to you. If you live in an area that has banned you from owning a rifle, the carbine pistol is the next best thing, being almost a rifle itself. No other pistol is going to give you the same options and features all in one package as the carbine pistol does. As a hybrid of a rifle and pistol, they are far and away the best option if you are going to have to face lawlessness and disorder. The main advantage of carbine pistols is they allow you to have nearly all the benefits of a rifle while they are still legally considered to be pistols. They have better range and more power than other pistols. They can mount all the accessories of their parent rifle, giving you plenty of options for customizing your weapon to you. They are also useful for someone who needs a rifle but cannot handle the size and weight. They also hold the most ammunition, with a variety of high-capacity magazines available beyond the standard 20 or 30 round magazines that come with it. The disadvantage of carbine pistols are that they are still essentially rifles as far as functionality is concerned, even if they are a bit smaller. They are almost impossible to conceal and cannot be drawn quickly if you need them while you are carrying concealed. They are many times heavier than other pistols, and you'll have to carry it or sling it wherever you go, which can be tiring. They are not a sidearm like other pistols are, and should instead be considered a primary weapon on their own. Chapter 6. Muzzleloaders. Muzzleloaders are single-shot pistols that are hand-loaded from the muzzle rather than from the breech. They use loose powder in a separate bullet instead of a single preloaded cartridge. The powder charge is added and then the bullet is pushed into place with the help of a ramrod. Once the bullet is seated, the muzzleloader is cocked by pulling the hammer back. Once it is fired, the entire process must be repeated to reload. As they use black powder and bullets instead of a full cartridge, muzzleloaders cost very little to fire. Even in the case of a complete collapse, you will still be able to reload them, as you can easily make your own black powder and cast your own shot. Making black powder by hand is simple once you know about the proper proportions, and the tools required are simple and easy to use, both for the powder and the shot. Supplying ammunition for muzzleloaders is a trivially easy task. Muzzleloaders are excellent hunting pistols, as they were designed for that purpose. Concealed carry is not recommended because of the limitations inherent to muzzleloaders. The military abandoned muzzleloaders more than a century ago, and they are no longer used in combat. Muzzleloaders are useful for hunting all but small game. The large bullets do plenty of damage, and the accuracy of the pistols allow for precise shot placement. Mounting a scope will assist you in aiming at longer ranges, so you can keep more distance between you and your prey. The accuracy is a necessity, though, as the long reloads will make it very unlikely that you'll get a second shot. If you are hunting dangerous game, muzzleloaders have one serious drawback. The single shot means that if whatever you are hunting decides to come after you, then you have just one shot, maybe two if you can reload in time. If you miss or only wound your target, you will not have much chance to make up for your error. The large bullets used in muzzleloaders will do plenty of damage, but may not be enough to stop your prey with a single shot. While it is possible to conceal a muzzleloader, it is not a use for which they are designed. With a large frame and carrying only one bullet, they are not suitable for concealed carry. If you do manage to conceal a muzzleloader, then if you ever need to use it, you will have one shot. Then you will have to immediately retreat and begin reloading. This is a last resort if you have nothing better. Muzzleloaders are completely inappropriate for any sort of combat. While having one is better than being unarmed, it's not by much. Firing, then have to hide for 10 to 20 seconds or more to reload, is a terrible tactic, so any other type of firearm is a better choice. Retreat is preferable to an attack if you end up in a fight with only a muzzleloader. It is only in the most extreme circumstances that a muzzleloader should be used in a fight, and the situation is desperate indeed if you're forced to resort to using one. If you are at all worried about having to use your pistol for anything other than hunting, do not use a muzzleloader. The largest advantage of a muzzleloader, it is not legally considered a firearm, so you can buy one without having to register it or go through the background checks. In addition, both the pistol and ammunition cost less, especially considering the large caliber bullets used in most muzzleloaders. It makes an excellent hunting pistol and provides an economical way to hunt large game. The disadvantage of a muzzleloader is reloading. It takes a long time and is a complicated process. This means that firing multiple shots takes time, and that's not a luxury most would have in a fight. Chapter 7. Pistol Summary. Revolvers. Pros. They have a wide range of calibers and more options for large calibers. They are mechanically simple with fewer moving parts. They can mount a scope. They retain shells after firing, leaving no presence and allowing for reloading. They are less expensive. They are concealable. They have a durable, all-metal construction. Cons for revolvers. They are very heavy for their size. The trigger pull is heavy. They have low capacity and longer load times. They can be awkward and unwieldy. They require frequent cleaning. Autoloaders. Pros. They are lightweight. They hold more rounds and changing magazines to reload is quick and simple. They are very reliable. They can be drawn and fired quickly. They are concealable. They are easy to aim. Autoloader cons. They do not have many large caliber options available. They are not very accurate beyond close range. They have wear issues with certain parts. Carbine pistols. Pros. They fire more powerful rifle rounds. They are accurate out to longer ranges. They have lots of options for scopes and accessories. They are excellent weapons for a gunfight. They have more options for large capacity magazines. They have a variety of different types to match your needs. They operate like a rifle from which they are derived, letting you cross-train. Cons for carbine pistols. They are heavy. They are expensive. They keep many of the problems the original rifle had. They are not concealable. They can be difficult to control. Muzzle loaders. Pros. They fire large caliber rounds. They are mechanically simple with few moving parts. They can mount a scope. They are accurate. They are less expensive, and they use cheap ammunition. Muzzleloader cons. They only fire one shot. They are slow to reload. They're heavy for their size. They are very loud. They need to be cleaned frequently. As you can see, each pistol has its place, and what one pistol does well, the other might not. It is all based on what works for you. If you are planning on bugging out and may have to fight your way out, a carbine pistol might be what you need. If you want to carry concealed so that you will always be prepared for an emergency, then an autoloader or a small revolver might be right for you. If you are going to be hunting or defending yourself from the local wildlife, then a large caliber revolver or a carbine pistol will be where you should look. If you want a pistol for your wife or girlfriend so that she can defend herself, go for an autoloader. Chapter 8. Calibers. Once you've decided on the type of pistol you want, you need to consider the caliber that you want. The caliber should do what you need it to do, whether that be hunting or defending your home. The number of calibers available is massive, and you can find one for almost any situation or purpose. Calibers are designated by their approximate size of the bullets in inches or millimeters. 45 auto is an inch measurement, noting that the round in question is about 0.45 inches wide, specifically 0.452 inches. 9x19 millimeter parabellum is a metric measurement, which is usually 9.01 millimeters wide. The specific caliber is important because each pistol is designed for one or more specific cartridges, and loading a cartridge other than what that pistol has been designed for is incredibly unsafe. For hunting, you want a larger caliber with more power. The .357 Magnum is about the smallest caliber that is acceptable for hunting and will be sufficient for deer and similar size prey. For large game, you'd be better off looking at the .455 Causal or .45 Long Colt. These have the power and range to kill large game animals, including bears. You may want to look for non-leaded bullets in these rounds, as fragmentation will occur with faster rounds, and having small pieces of lead in your meat is not very appealing. For a concealed carry, smaller rounds are typically better, as they take up less space. At close range, the lower power of these rounds is not a problem, and having more smaller rounds is an advantage in a gunfight. Calibers like the .380 Auto or the 9x19 Parabellum are good choices, especially when using jacketed hollow points. Larger calibers take up more space and are more dangerous to be shooting in public because of the risk of over-penetration. Home defense and combat share many similarities, and so the same rounds will do for either of them. Pistol calibers should be enough to incapacitate or kill, such as the 9x19 Parabellum or .45 Auto. The idea should be to have a pistol with a lot of bullets, such as the 9x19, or a few very powerful bullets, like the .45. It comes down to a personal call to which style you prefer. If you require a rifle round, then either the .223 Remington or .308 Winchester rounds are good. Smaller rounds allow you to carry more, but larger rounds do more damage and travel further. Again, personal preference. Whichever round you choose, it should be commonly available, or you need to buy a lot of it. In the event of a collapse, you will no longer be able to go to the store for ammunition, and finding a rare or specialty caliber on a scavenging run is not a sound plan. The alternative is reloading. Although it is expensive upfront, you can end up saving a lot of money by reloading your own ammunition. The supplies are cheaper than the preloaded rounds that you can buy in the stores, and if you reload your own ammunition, you are in a good position. You will no longer be limited to the rounds you had before the collapse, as you can take the cases and load them again. You should buy the cheapest ammo that will reliably feed for your training. Since you're going to be shooting at the range and not at someone trying to kill you, it doesn't have to do anything but hit a paper target. For the rounds that you plan on using in a real-life situation, you should buy quality ammunition. Jacketed hollow points do much more damage than hollow points do, so you are better off getting them, although they can be more expensive than full metal jacket. The exception to this is when you're planning on hunting large game, because you will need the increased penetration of a full metal jacketed bullet to reach deep enough inside the animal to do damage. Chapter 9. Comparisons of pistols to rifles and shotguns. It is important that you understand how pistols are different from rifles or shotguns, knowing what these differences mean to you in practical terms. Pistols come with certain advantages, but they also have their disadvantages. You need to know when a pistol is or is not sufficient for the task at hand, and if another firearm is better suited to get it done. Pistols are smaller, lighter, and faster than rifles and shotguns. They are also weaker and closer ranged. They can be concealed and drawn quickly and easily. Rifles are larger, longer, and heavier than pistols, but they shoot further, faster rounds at longer ranges. They can only be concealed in pieces. Now, shotguns are larger, longer, and heavier than pistols, and they shoot larger shells with different bullet loads. Pistols are by far the smallest type of firearm. They're designed to be fired with one hand, and though the larger examples may need two hands to handle, they do not reach the size of either rifles or shotguns. They're not as heavy, they take up less space. Rifles and shotguns are comparable in weight. They need two hands to fire because of their length and recoil. They are heavier and take up more space than pistols, shotguns even more so than rifles. Pistols can be concealed on your person ready to go. They can fit in a belt holster, in a jacket, or on a shoulder holster. When they are needed, it is a simple task to draw and fire them. Rifles can only be concealed if they're taken down into sections and then only in a backpack or briefcase or messenger bag. They have to be reassembled before they can be used, which will take a minute or two. Shotguns are not concealable as they are just simply too large. Pistols use small rounds that do not carry the energy of rifle rounds or shotgun shells. They can use high-capacity magazines to carry more rounds, but the higher the number, the smaller the round, generally speaking. Rifles use larger, heavier rounds that travel faster and longer than pistols or shotguns. They also use high-capacity rounds, but they do not have to sacrifice as much size for quantity. Both pistols and rifles have a limited selection of bullet loads, which are essentially limited to jacketed, hollow points, and full metal jacket, as specialty bullets such as tracers are expensive and of limited utility to civilians, being designed to fit a military purpose. Shotguns use larger shells, but carry few of them. They use a tubular magazine instead of a box magazine common to pistols and rifles, and so they have restricted capacity. Shot and slugs are among the two most common loads for shotgun shells, with the former being a collection of smaller pellets inside the shell, and the latter a single large bullet. The width of the bore allows for many variant loads for shotgun shells, with some examples including bean bags or flares, among others. Drawing a pistol is much faster than a rifle or shotgun. They are so light they can easily be pointed and aimed. A short eye relief makes matching the sights faster than those of a rifle, but a shotgun with a bead sight is almost as fast, although less precise. Rifles and shotguns are heavy and can be awkward to carry at the ready at all time. They are longer, so you have to fight your leverage to raise them. Finding your aim is slower because of the length of the eye relief. Pistols have the shortest range due to the smaller bullets. The smaller powder charges in the cartridge and the short barrel limit the speed of the bullet, and the short eye relief makes aiming at long ranges a difficult task. Shotguns fall in the middle, as a rifled slug can be fired accurately out over 100 meters. Shot shells do not have nearly the range, the grouping of the pellets spread out and slows down relatively quickly, but they're designed for closer shots and can be improved with the use of a choke. Rifles have the longest range, as a long eye relief, long barrel, and large cartridge combine a more stable bullet, high velocity, and precise aiming to increase the range at which effective shots can be made. In close quarters, pistols can be aimed and fired faster, but carry a weaker bullet. This can be compensated for by making follow-on shots, taking advantage of the light recoil. Rifles and shotguns are more awkward up close, as the length can make it hard to bring them to bear if space is limited. Rifles are slower to aim, but the powerful rounds will often do more damage. Multiple shots are slightly harder to make, but not by much. Recoil is stronger than that of a pistol, but the weight of the rifle helps control it somewhat. Shotguns do the most damage, as the shot and slugs it fires are both large and comparatively slow, and so they transfer more of their momentum to the target. Follow-on shots are slower than pistols and rifles, but each shot inflicts severe injuries on the target. Chapter 10, Rifle versus Pistol Summary. Overall, rifles and shotguns are superior weapons, but a pistol is more versatile. Using a rifle or a shotgun for your main weapon is the best option, but if it is not feasible, then a pistol is a good choice. A pistol can be carried anywhere you like without anyone being aware, and when you are up close, most of the problems either disappear or benefit you instead. Pistols can also be easier to handle, which means you can use a pistol where a rifle or shotgun would be too much. Women, children, and the elderly can handle a pistol where they might struggle with a rifle or shotgun. Pistols are also good for introducing someone to firearms, as they use the same principles and fundamentals for their operation, opening them up to something larger later on. Now that you know more about the different types of pistols, their benefits and their drawbacks, and you have considered your needs, you are ready to decide. Do your research, get other opinions, and find out what pistol you want. Make sure to take your time and do this right. Once you have made the decision, you're ready to go shopping. Chapter 11, Purchase Your Pistol. You have a pistol in mind, and now you're ready to go buy it. You have a few different options when you look to purchase a firearm, and they have some very important differences. You need to understand what goes into the purchase of a firearm beyond the register. The options available to you are gun shops, internet stores, auction sites, gun shows, and private party sales. The gun store should be the simplest of them all, but because of the government requirements for firearm dealers, it is a more complicated process than it needs to be. Once you go in and select the weapon you want, they will give you a firearms transaction record, or Form 4473, for you to fill out. You will need photo identification for them to check, and you will have to provide your information on the 4473. The dealer will take this and call up the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, or NICS, which is run by the FBI. He will give them your information so they can run a background check on you and make sure that you are legally permitted to own firearms. Now, none of this is applicable if you're buying a muzzleloader, as it is not considered to be a firearm under the law. Once the background check is complete, the dealer has verified that you may legitimately purchase a firearm, you may complete the transaction. This is usually a fairly quick process and should not take more than 10 or 15 minutes. Sometimes the system gets backed up and it can take longer, but this is a rare occasion. If this does happen, expect quite a wait, as it can take hours or even days for them to work through the backlog. If you choose to go through an online gun store or gun auction site, you'll have to go through the same process. Since you have to complete the form and background check in person, you'll have to have your pistol shipped to someone who holds a federal firearms license, FFL, so they can do the paperwork for you. This is usually the closest gun store, and they will probably have an FFL fee for you to pay for their time, which is in the $20 to $30 range, plus the shipping fees from the seller. You can find some good deals online, especially on the auction sites, but you will have to pay a little bit extra to get it delivered to you. Once you have passed the background check and paid, you can take your pistol and ammunition home. The sale is complete, and you can start getting familiar with your new firearm. However, the government now has a record of you buying a firearm. With the risk of registration leading to confiscation, this may be a concern for you. The government has used registration lists in the past to go back and find gun owners that did not turn them in. If you do not want to leave a paper trail, you can look for a private seller online or at a gun show. Despite what you might have heard about the gun show loophole, it does not actually exist. You still have to fill out a 4473 and go through the NICS check if you buy from an FFL at a gun show. What a gun show does do, however, is make it much easier to find a private party willing to sell, and if you go through a private seller, no paperwork, no paper trail. You pay him, he gives you the gun, and you are done. You can do this at his house, your house, at the gun show, or anywhere else you decide to meet. The gun show just happens to gather together a lot of men with guns in one place, that being the purpose of it. If some of the attendees want to buy or sell firearms, then that is their business. For this reason, if you're having a hard time finding a particular pistol you want, or you're trying to avoid leaving a trace, a gun show is a good place to look. If you decide to buy from a private party, or even if you buy used from a gun store, make sure to inspect the weapon before you buy it. You do not want to buy a pistol that has been neglected or abused, as it is more likely to fail on you. Check to see if it is clean or if it has signs of corrosion or other damage, and if it moves smoothly or it feels stiff, loose, or shows signs of any other problems. If you have access to a range, ask if you can test fire it. If you are buying from an individual, do not buy a firearm without having inspected and fired it. You can return a defective pistol to a gun store, but a private party sale is final. You might get lucky with someone being willing to take back a defective firearm, but you should not plan on it. Make sure you are getting what you pay for. Once you have completed all necessary steps and you have bought your pistol, you then must learn how to use it properly. Buying it was only the beginning. You have a lot to learn, and while there is a lot to take in, eventually it will become habit. The longer you work at it and the more time you put in, the better your results. Chapter 12, Pistol Safety. Once you have your pistol, firearm safety is the first and most important part of your training. Safety is something that you always need to have in mind, because one careless moment or small mistake can be fatal. Make sure that the pistol you bought to protect you and yours is not a danger instead. Good safety procedures are covered by the Weapons Safety Rules. You may not suffer a mishap each and every time you break one of the rules, but any time an accident happens, it is because you broke one or more of them. If you follow them at all times, you do not have to worry. First Weapon Safety Rule. Treat every weapon as if it were loaded. Never act in any manner that you would not if your pistol was loaded. You never know when a supposedly unloaded pistol still has a round in it. Being unloaded is not an excuse. Any weapon that you handle should be treated carefully, loaded or not. Do not allow yourself to distinguish between how you treat a loaded weapon as opposed to one that is unloaded. Breaking one of the other rules because your pistol is empty is a bad habit to learn. The reflex and unconscious habits you pick up while you are handling your pistol do not care if it is unloaded or not. Violate safety while you have an unloaded weapon, and eventually you are going to do the same when it is loaded. Second Weapon Safety Rule. Never point a weapon at anything you do not intend to shoot. If you do not intend to shoot something, never point your pistol at it. You need to pay attention to where the muzzle of your pistol is pointing at all times, and it should always be in a safe direction. Point it at the ground or the sky, or point it downrange and not anywhere else. Maintaining proper muzzle awareness at all times is very important. You should know where your pistol is pointed at any time and check it often. Third weapon safety rule. Keep your weapon on safe until you are ready to fire. This rule may not apply to all pistols, as some do not have external safeties. If your pistol does have a safety, it should be engaged unless you are ready to squeeze the trigger. This means as soon as you stop firing, switch it back to safe. When you are carrying it around, when you put it away, and any other time that you are not actively shooting at something, you should put your pistol on safe. If you drop your pistol, the safety is another way to prevent an accident. If you have a safety, use it. Fourth weapon safety rule. Keep your finger straight and off the trigger until you intend to fire. Never put your finger inside the trigger guard until you are prepared to fire. If you are standing, walking, or running, you should have your finger pointed toward the muzzle. This will prevent you from accidentally squeezing the trigger while you are not paying attention. If you become distracted and you place your finger on the trigger, you can pull it without meaning to and cause a negligent discharge. It is best to get in the habit of lying your finger along the weapon and keeping it there. If you have your finger on the trigger of your pistol when you are startled, fall, or otherwise subject to sudden stress, your first instinct is to clench your fist, which will cause a negligent discharge. This is an involuntary reflex, and it happens without you even having to think about it. The best way to avoid that reflex is keep your finger safely out of the way until you need to squeeze the trigger. Fifth weapon safety rule. Know your target and what is behind it. Every time you squeeze the trigger, you should have positively identified your target as well as anything behind it. If you miss, you can send a bullet several hundred meters beyond your target before it finally stops moving. Anything that crosses its path will stop it, be the ground, a wall, or an innocent bystander. Even if you hit your target, the bullet can penetrate through and continue on. Since the bullets are going to continue until they hit something, make sure you know what that something is. At close range, you may over-penetrate your target, where the bullet keeps its momentum and goes through the target, continuing on until it hits someone or something else. This is extremely dangerous inside a house or in a crowd unless you're using certain types of rounds. In these situations, knowing what is behind your target becomes even more important. These five rules form the basics of all safety practices. Commit them to memory and never allow yourself to forget them. If you see those around you violating these rules, politely remind them to be safe and likewise accept any corrections they offer you. Do not become a danger to yourself or others because you could not be bothered to keep safe. Respect the weapon and train safety so that you will train safely. Chapter 13, Pistol Operations and Maintenance. Function check. Now that you have your pistol and are familiar with safety, it is time to learn how it works. Take it and look it over and find all the controls. Since each pistol is different, make sure to read your manual so you know how yours works. Once you are confident that you understand how it works, you should perform a functions test. Take your pistol and clear it. After you've properly cleared it, place the pistol on safe if it has one and pull the trigger. If it is working, nothing should happen and the trigger should move very little, if at all. Take it off safe and pull the trigger again. This time it should move freely and you should notice some indication that it would have fired, as either the hammer should have fallen or the striker should have moved. Now, release the trigger and without cocking or racking it again, pull the trigger. The pistol should not fire. Now, cock or rack it and pull the trigger again, this time holding it to the rear instead of releasing it. The pistol should fire. Then with the trigger still held down, cock or rack the pistol again. It should not fire as you finish cocking or racking it. Release the trigger and then pull again. This time it should fire. If all the checks pass, then the pistol is functioning properly and should be ready to be fired. If any of these checks fail, stop what you're doing and immediately put the pistol away. It needs to be serviced by a gunsmith, as the failure indicates that your pistol has a serious problem. Do not load or fire your pistol until after it has been checked and repaired. Any attempt to fire a malfunctioning pistol at this point is dangerous and irresponsible and can result in injury or death. Maintenance. Cleaning your pistol on a regular basis is an essential practice for every shooter. It keeps the pistol operating smoothly and keeps it in good working order. Allowing your pistol to get dirty puts it at risk for malfunction or damage. It will also wear faster and is more likely to corrode than if you serviced it. The longer it goes without cleaning, the greater the issues, especially with revolvers and muzzleloaders, which will seize up if you let them get too dirty. You need to clean your pistol every single time you finish shooting. If you set aside a certain amount of time to go shooting, some of that has to be weapons cleaning time. If you have the time to shoot, then you have the time to clean it afterwards. It doesn't take long, so take a rag, a brush, solvent, and oil to scrub it down, wipe it off, and protect it. More detailed cleaning does not need to be done as often, but it does have to be done regularly, whether or not you have shot recently. Once a month is a good schedule and will keep any small problems that come up under control. You should also do a thorough cleaning after every 100 rounds that you have fired since the last cleaning. Break down your pistol according to the instructions in the owner's manual. Scrub out everything. This is the time to get all the cracks and crevices that you miss when you do a quick cleaning after a day at the range. Get out all the carbon and corrosion, clean all the pieces, and then give them a coating of oil to keep them safe from the elements. Put the pistol back together, wipe down the outside, and give it another light coating, putting it away for the next time. The tools you need for cleaning are a brush, a boar snake or boar punch, rags or towels, cotton swabs, solvents, and lubricants. Brushes need stiff but flexible bristles and are used to scrub off the pistol inside and out. A boar punch is a set of rods with a cleaning attachment to the tip, and a boar snake is a long thin cord with a thick section at the end, and both are used to clean out the inside of the barrel. Use cotton swabs to get inside small holes and areas that the brush cannot reach and to check for any residual after the cleaning. Solvents are used to break up carbon and corrosion, and the lubricant reduces wear from friction and protects the pistol from moisture and dust. A simple cleaning kit can be assembled from common household items. Use an old toothbrush, a wire clothes hanger for the boar punch, old socks for rags, and cotton swabs, and you have all the tools you need for a thorough cleaning session. It is best to buy solvents and lubricants that are specifically designed for firearms, but you can get by with using mineral spirits as a solvent and motor oil as a lubricant. Be careful when you use alternate solvents, as they can strip the oil from the metal, making it more brittle and more vulnerable to corrosion. Apply a generous amount of lubricant if you do, to replace what was removed. Chapter 14, Pistol Markmanship. Fundamentals of Markmanship. Markmanship is the skill and practice of handling a weapon so that you strike where you aim when you fire it. Besides safety, nothing will ever be as important as proper markmanship is to shooting. You, as the shooter, have the most influence on the direction of your shots, but it requires skill to do. Learning how to shoot well starts with basic markmanship. The three components of basic markmanship are breath control, trigger control, and sight use. They are easy to get wrong because they seem so simple. Nevertheless, they have to be done right. Learn them and practice them, and you will see improvement in your shooting and groups. Breath control is the manipulation of your breathing to provide stability. It relies on the timing of your breath to take advantage of the stillness in between breaths. If you fire your pistol in the middle of a breath, your body will be moving. This will shift your aim over the course of the breath. To avoid throwing off your aim, you should shoot during your natural respiratory pause, the short period of time in between the end of your exhale and before your next inhalation. In order to understand the natural respiratory pause, you perform a short exercise to demonstrate. Close your eyes and breathe in and out a few times. Then take a deep breath and hold it for a count of four, then release it over a count of four. Once you exhale, wait a few moments until you need to breathe again. That break is the natural respiratory pause. While you are doing this, focus on the movement of your body. Feel the slight movement during breathing and the stillness and relaxation during the pause. When you breathe in and out, your entire body moves, although you don't usually notice it. All that movement will be transferred to your pistol, making it hard to aim. Your muscles also tense up while you are breathing, which makes aiming more difficult. If you fire when you are tensed up, you will reflexively relax at the very moment that you fire. When this happens, it is at the worst possible time, as you have no time to recover. Firing during the natural respiratory pause allows you to fire without the tightness interfering with your aim and without the relaxation throwing off the shot at the last instant. Waiting until the pause removes all the interference, and it is the best time to take a shot. Trigger control is the proper operation of the trigger during a shot. If you do not move the trigger properly, it will interfere with your aim and cause you to anticipate the shot. You must squeeze the trigger instead of pulling it to control the movement. If you pull the trigger, you are exerting force in another direction from your aim. Your hand tightens when you pull the trigger, and it will shift your grip and your pistol with it. This will pull your sights off the target and force you to move them back. If you muscle the pistol back into place, you'll be fighting yourself. You will tire your muscles faster, and your aim will become unsteady. Squeezing the trigger instead of pulling it stabilizes your hand and does not move any muscles besides the ones controlling your trigger finger. It moves the trigger directly backwards, providing a smoother movement. It is a more controlled movement as well. To demonstrate the difference, put your arm out in front of you. Make a fist with all but your index finger so that you are pointing directly ahead. Pull your fingers into the fist and watch how your hand and arm move. Muscles shift from your hand to your shoulder, and your fist moves. Next, return to pointing straight ahead and squeeze your finger backward like you are pinching something between your index finger and your thumb. Watch how little movement occurs in your hand and arm and how smooth the movement is. When you squeeze the trigger, it allows the shot to surprise you. If you expect the shot, then you will brace yourself for the noise and the recoil, even if you do not realize it. Instead, slowly squeeze the trigger to take up the slack and keep moving until you fire the shot. That way, you will not anticipate the shot, and that will prevent you from flinching or hesitating as you fire. Sight use consists of sight alignment and sight picture. Sight alignment is simply aligning the sight so that you have the pistol pointed in the proper direction. Sight picture is the proper focus and placement of the sights on target. Together, they'll give you the correct aim. If you have one wrong, the other will likely be wrong as well, and this will throw off your aim. When you aim down the sights, the front and rear sights need to be aligned with each other. Looking at the sights while they're out of alignment is no good, as the point of aim will be incorrect. The method of alignment is dependent on the type of sights mounted on your pistol. The two most common are notch sights and aperture sights. Notch sights are aligned by placing the front sight post in between the rear sight notches with the top of both front and rear sights level. Aperture sights are aligned by centering the front sight post on the rear aperture both horizontally and vertically. In order to demonstrate how sight alignment works, put both of your hands in front of your face, one in front of the other, and make fists with the thumbs up. Align the thumbs in front of your eyes so they make a perfect line to a specific point. Now move the hand closest to you in any direction, taking it out of alignment. Keep your front hand in front of the aiming point, then move your head until your thumbs are aligned once more, and look at what you are pointing at now. The distance between the two points is much further than you moved your thumbs, just as the point of aim and point of impact will be different if even a small misalignment of the sights happen. Sight picture is the image that you see when you are aiming down your sights once they are aligned. the front sight post should be centered on your target. If you are firing at a circular target, you should be able to see a half circle above the front sight post. If you are firing at a silhouette target or a human, you should see the shoulders and head of your target above the front sight post. When you aim, you should be focused on the tip of your front sight post. Look at your target long enough to identify it, then shift your focus back to your front sight. Both the rear sight and target should be blurred when you fire. It sounds counterintuitive, but if you focus on your target, you'll end up striking around it. By focusing on the front sight post, you can ensure that your sights are still properly aligned when you fire. As you can see, the differences between the right way and the wrong way to shoot is very small and is easy to do wrong. The best way to shoot well is to focus on the basics. With practice and experience, you'll learn to tell the difference, and you'll be able to tell what your mistakes were after you are done. The simplest parts of shooting are the most important, and once you do them right, you will see great improvement. Chapter 15, Ballistics. An understanding of ballistics is a necessary part of training marksmanship. Ballistics is the study of the way bullets act once they've been fired. You will be introduced to the three stages of ballistics: internal, external, and terminal. Internal ballistics is the behavior of the bullet while it is still inside the barrel. External ballistics is the behavior of the bullet while it travels through space. Terminal ballistics is the behavior of the bullet once it strikes its target until it stops all movement. Internal ballistics processes begin as soon as the primer is struck and the powder ignites. When that happens, the expanding gases begin to push the bullet down the barrel. At the same time, the heat from the burning powder causes the bullet to expand slightly, which helps it engage the rifling on the inside of the barrel. Rifling is a spiral pattern inside the barrel that causes the bullet to spin, stabilizing it when it exits the barrel and increasing accuracy. Any obstructions or imperfections in the barrel will degrade accuracy, even if they are minor. One example of this is carbon buildup inside the barrel. Deposits of the burning gases that push the bullet down the barrel will begin to coat the barrel. Over time, these deposits will grow larger and become more of a problem. Regular cleaning helps get rid of them, which will restore the accuracy of your pistol. This portion of ballistics ends fairly quickly, but is where the bullet gets its direction and momentum, which will carry it through its path until it hits something. This is why it is important that you hold your pistol as steady as possible while you are shooting. Any shifts in the pistol will transfer over to the bullet, which will alter the trajectory. You want to have as little movement as possible until the bullet has left the barrel. As the bullet leaves the barrel, the external ballistics phase begins, and a separate set of ballistic processes start to influence it. The first is the release of gas as the bullet clears the muzzle. The escaping gas vents out, but they do not do so evenly, so the bullet is slightly destabilized and begins a slight wobble. As it continues on, the spin imparted on it by the rifling will stabilize it somewhat, but it will also be affected by atmospherics, like air pressure and wind, as well as gravity. The bullet will want to continue on in a straight line, but gravity and friction will slow it down and bring it down. At long ranges, this can be quite significant, but it is negligible until you get out past about 100 meters or so. Past that, the resistance of the air will slow your bullet down and it will fall faster and faster. Longer range shots will spend more time traveling through the air, and you'll have to include more of these factors into your aim. Most of the different forces that alter the path of your bullet will not have as great an effect on it if you are going to be shooting in close. Even at the longer ranges you can reach with a pistol, you will probably only ever have to deal with gravity, friction, and wind. Once the bullet strikes an object, it begins the terminal phase of ballistics. The behavior of the bullet is dependent on the material it struck. A bullet striking a body acts differently than one striking stone, metal, or wood. This is important to know, as bullets will still retain some of their energy and momentum after the initial impact and will act in predictable ways depending on what was hit. When a bullet enters the body, it creates a wound channel behind it, which is called cavitation. The channel caused by cavitation will initially be wider than the bullet as flesh is pushed outward by the shockwave of the bullet passing, but it will attempt to return to its original shape soon after, leaving a small hole. If the bullet passes all the way through, the exit will have been considerably larger due to the shockwave pushing ahead of it. Inside the body, flesh can compress and move out of the way, but upon exit, no more space is available, and the shockwave will push it outward, leaving a gaping hole. Another effect of the shockwave is hydrostatic shock. The impact of the bullet is transferred through the body, possibly damaging the internal organs. It can cause brain hemorrhaging and organ damage, even in areas of the body distant from the path of the bullet. The effect is more pronounced if repeated shots are made quickly. If multiple bullets strike the target, it can cause a sudden disruption to blood pressure, which can result in temporary unconsciousness. Some rounds will fragment when they hit their target, sending several pieces of the bullet through the body. This will increase the chance of a wound channel causing fatal damage. Fragmentation usually occurs at higher velocity bullets or in jacketed hollow point rounds. This is a definite advantage if you're trying to put down whatever you're shooting at, but it can be a disadvantage if you are hunting, as you'll end up with tiny pieces of lead throughout the area where it was shot. If a bullet only strikes flesh, it will travel in a fairly straight path until all of its energy is spent or it penetrates through. If it hits bone, the reaction is unpredictable. Sometimes the bullet will split into pieces and spread out through the body. Some of those pieces will follow the bone, which can lead them into areas of the body that are distant from the point of impact, doing further damage. Other times, the bullet will strike the bone and shed all of its momentum, which may result in a bullet being lodged inside the bone. If a bullet goes through the bone and continues on, it may begin to tumble, which will increase the size of the wound cavity. A bone that has been broken by a bullet is dangerous, as blood loss is usually quite severe, and shards of bone often spread out from the impact site to do further damage to the flesh surrounding it. When a bullet hits something hard like stone, metal, and some woods, it will deflect if it does not have enough energy to go through. When a bullet strikes at an angle, it is much more likely to deflect than to penetrate, and thin objects will stop a bullet from penetrating. The direction it takes from there is erratic, but the bullet will often follow along the surface. If it is a wall or some other long, flat surface, the bullet may skip along the wall. This is very dangerous to anyone along the wall. If the bullet has enough energy to penetrate, it will continue moving, but it may still experience some deflection. Instead of continuing in a straight line, it will go in the same general direction, but is not predictable once the bullet hits. The same effect happens when shooting through glass. In addition, bullets can penetrate farther through solid objects than expected. Common handgun bullets can penetrate a quarter of an inch of steel, and rifle bullets even more. Concrete, stone, wood, and other materials can be penetrated even deeper than metal. Walls, cars, and even small trees will not stop a direct hit from many pistols and most rifles. Chapter 16, Sight Zero. You will need to zero your pistol before you start shooting and after each time you take your pistol apart to clean it. Check your owner's manual for instructions on how to adjust the sights on your pistol so that you get the correct procedures for your specific pistol. Once you know what you have to do and you have the tools required, it's time for the shooting portion of the zeroing. You will need 3 targets, 2 magazines loaded with 10 rounds each for the autoloaders and carbine pistols, or 20 rounds for revolvers and muzzle loaders, a support for your pistol, such as a pillow or seat cushion, a marker, ear and eye protection. A data book is also an optional item, but is good to have so you can record your shots and make notes of any successes or mistakes. Set up the targets side by side at 25 meters with a few inches between them. Lay down the cushions at the firing line and get down in the prone position. Once you are lying on the ground, load your pistol with the first magazine or with 5 rounds and get in as stable a stance as you can. You can use the cushion to steady your hands while you shoot so that you can concentrate on aiming. Make sure to focus on your marksmanship fundamentals as you shoot. Fire 5 shots at the center of the target on the left. Aim at the same spot each time you fire until you have fired 5 rounds. Stand up. Make sure to be careful with your pistol and mindful where it is pointed as you do, and approach your target. You should see all 5 rounds in a group somewhere on the paper. Adjust your sight so that you can bring your next group closer to the center of the target. Return back to the firing line and repeat the process, firing the next 5 rounds at the right target. Go and check and adjust your sights again so that you are closer to the center. If you are already on center, do not adjust your sights. Return to the firing line and this time, fire the 10 remaining rounds at the center target. From there, you should have all the shot data you need to make any final adjustments to your sights, and you should have a properly zeroed pistol. If you have trouble shooting a group, then you are not ready for the drills. Keep practicing, keep reading, and keep shooting until you can group regularly. If you are at a range or know someone who is a good shot, ask him or her to help out. You have to be able to shoot properly before you can start learning anything else, or you'll just end up wasting time and money. Without accuracy, the skills you practice will be of no use. Sometimes the problem lies in your pistol and not your ability. Having someone you know who is a good shot fire a pistol is a good way to locate the problem. If someone who shoots well has trouble keeping their shots tight, you may have a bad pistol that just needs to be fixed. The parts could be loose, or you have some unnoticed damage. Chapter 17, Psychology of Shooting. When you shoot someone, your goal is not to kill them. Your goal is to disable him in order to prevent him from doing you any harm. If you shoot someone and inflict a fatal injury, he may still have enough time before he dies to injure or kill you in return. In contrast, a crippling injury to your target may not kill him, but it will prevent him from continuing to attack you. As such, you must always choose your shots for the best chance to disable your targets. The reason behind the distinction is the ability of the human body to minimize and survive an injury. Aside from a durability and adaptability that will keep a man in a fight longer than you might expect, even injuries that will be fatal can be kept under control by the body. This is done through a set of physical and chemical systems in the body. They interact to numb pain, slow blood loss, and minimize the damage inflicted to the body. A shot to the heart is a fatal wound, and only immediate surgical intervention will prevent death. That being understood, the heart can continue to beat for minutes afterward, and the target can be alert and mobile for over a minute. Even if the heart suffers so much damage that it ceases to beat, the rest of the body can continue to function for several seconds, which is a long time in a fight for your life. Skin and muscle are very elastic and will stretch when shot. The cavitation of a bullet will cause a large disruption, but the body will return to normal almost instantly, leaving a wound smaller than the size of the actual bullet. The blood vessels will become constricted, which limits the amount flowing through them if they are cut open. A wound that would cause massive bleeding can be slowed down to a trickle, and the permanent injury is minimized, so that the time and energy spent healing is reduced. The only way to reliably remove someone from a fight is to target the area of the body that will prevent them from moving or acting. The best places to aim for are the central nervous system and the pelvic girdle. Either one will cause damage that cannot be ignored. Massive trauma is not optimal, but if enough damage is done, it will suffice. Blood loss is the least effective, as it often takes minutes to bleed out, making incapacitation an uncertain prospect. The central nervous system is made up of the brain and the spinal column. It connects to the peripheral nervous system, which is the network of nerves that reach every muscle, bone, and organ. All instructions for the body, from blinking to sprinting start off in the brain. The spinal column transmits them to the nerves, which communicates between the body and the brain. Any damage to the central nervous system will disrupt that vital link between the brain and the rest of the body and will likely result in death. The best and most effective area of the central nervous system to shoot is the medulla oblongata. The medulla oblongata is responsible for the autonomic functions, or processes that do not require conscious thought. It is also the link between the rest of the brain and the spinal column. No matter what you do, the instructions have to pass through the medulla oblongata. This includes breathing, the beating of your heart, and most importantly, your reflexes. A shot to the medulla oblongata will instantly kill the target. As soon as the bullet penetrates it, the body will go completely limp and collapse. No reflexes will trigger, and all movement and brain functions will cease immediately. The medulla oblongata is the most basic level of the brain, and without its instructions and processes, nothing else can function. Targeting the rest of the brain or the spinal column is also effective, as it does not require much damage to cause incapacitation. Once the rest of the body stops receiving instructions from the brain, the target will be unable to harm you. An injury to the spinal column will incapacitate anything below the wounded area, and nothing can overcome that. Injury to the brain is even more serious and almost always fatal. Even if your target survives, he is likely to be knocked out by the impact. Now, the problem with targeting the central nervous system is its size. The brain and spine are small compared to the rest of the body and are hard to hit on a moving target. The first instinct is to duck and lower the head, so you'll have an even smaller target, and if you hit the head in an angle, then the skull can deflect the shot. The spine is also a hard target, as it is long and narrow, and surrounded by muscle and bone designed to protect the nerves within. The pelvic girdle is a set of bones that together form the pelvis. They connect the legs to the rest of the skeleton, and the muscles that connect to it support the body when it is upright and mobile. Several large blood vessels pass through the pelvic cavity, and it contains the bowels and reproductive organs. A shot to the pelvic girdle will result in a loss of mobility in your target. Without the rigid support of the unbroken pelvis, the muscles cannot support the weight of the upper body and will collapse. The broken bones can damage the blood vessels, and a bullet may tumble around the area after it hits the bone, doing even more damage. With the target collapsed, it is simple to follow up with shots to the central nervous system to finish him. If you do not kill the target immediately after shooting him in the pelvis, the wounds will likely prove fatal regardless. Blood loss is likely to be a concern, as well as infection caused by any injuries that ruptures the bowels. The pelvis takes months to heal, even if the wounds are survivable, so the target is not likely to threaten you again. The pelvis is a large target and is easy to shoot. It is fragile, so damaging it is not difficult, and any shots that strike the pelvis can easily do more damage to the surrounding tissues. However, it is not immediately fatal, and the target may recover enough to continue shooting at you. It is most useful in order to stop someone from charging you, as they will collapse and only be able to drag themselves if they have to move. Sensory. When you get into a fight for your life, your body is flooded with several chemicals that prepare you for violence. In addition to the physical effects mentioned earlier, you may experience unusual changes to your perception. These usually involve distortions or interference of vision, hearing, and fine motor skills, although others exist. One of the more common phenomena is called tachypsychia, which means speed of the mind. This is believed to be related to the chemicals that are released in the brain during and after a fight. It is a perception that time is either moving very slowly or very quickly. If it happens to you, you will notice that everything seems to be moving slowly, including yourself, but that you have more time to react mentally to whatever is going on. The sensations are temporary and will end once the fight does. However, the body undergoes a corresponding collapse after a fight, which results in physical and emotional fatigue, leaving you vulnerable. This is especially dangerous to you if the fight drew the attention of others in the area, as you will be an easy target in the state of exhaustion. Whenever you experience a threat, whether or not you actually had to fight, be careful about relaxing until you are sure you are safe. Chapter 18, Predators and Prey. Most people panic when confronted by violence. Any sort of threat will terrify them, and they will not be able to respond beyond fleeing the area or worse, just holding still, shocked into immobility. A few do not respond the same way, and they are in some ways drawn to violence. By learning what happens to both groups, you can train yourself to remain calm and focused, even when everyone else has lost control. Other people do not shrink from violence. The kind of person that does not hesitate to kill to get what they want is a predator. They can tell whether or not you are prey by the way you stand, the way you move, the way you act, and the way you look. If you want to avoid the attention of a predator, you must stop acting like their prey. Learn the ways of the predator, and they will avoid you. This is important because if you decide you want to have a pistol with which to defend yourself, you have to prepare for the fact that you may have to kill another person. If you are not willing and able to do that, then all you'll be doing is arming the first person you come across that is. Without the willingness to kill, your pistol is more a danger to you than those who would do you harm. Few people are comfortable with killing another person. This is a reluctance that is wired deep into the brain so that people will not go around killing each other. The few that do not have this block, or whom it has been lessened, are not obvious. Until the time comes, you cannot tell whether or not you have the block or not, and by that time, it may be too late. Training yourself to handle a fight is a better plan. The training you need to ready yourself for a confrontation is mainly psychological. Using your pistol is more than simply pulling the trigger. It is a decision to kill another person, and that is not a decision to be made lightly. You are responsible for making that decision and the consequences of it. It is far better that you make that decision ahead of time rather than when you are faced with a life or death situation. Once you have decided and trained for it, you can evaluate each situation as it comes up. Visualization and desensitization are conditioning methods used to teach military and law enforcement how to react to combat, and you will use them as well. You do not have to train to the extent they do, but the principles are the same, whether you are trained for elite special operations, police work, or simple self-defense. It's all mental preparation for when the time comes to make the choice, fight or die. Visualization is a simple habit and is very easy to add to your training. Simply put, it is imagining a situation, then deciding how you'll react to that situation. When you step up to the firing line at the range, picture a scenario that you would have to shoot to kill. Go through the event in your head while you're shooting your course of fire, and it will build a response. If that ever happens, you will have a record of what to do. The point of visualization is to create a memory. If you practice anything for long enough, you will eventually ingrain it into your unconscious memory. This is muscle memory, but is actually a function of the brain and not the muscles. You are training your mind to react to a threat in a certain way, even though you have had no actual experience. The visualizations will provide a workaround. In order to overcome the block against violence, you need to desensitize yourself to it. Using the same principles as overcoming other extreme fears, you introduce it in smaller measures, then increase it over time. As you add more and more realism to your training, you will become accustomed to it, and it will not bother you in a real fight. Just like training to shoot, the more you train for combat, the more familiar you will be, and the less likely you are to panic like many others do. To begin, you should be using targets shaped like a human silhouette instead of the circular targets that are usually used. Eventually, you can move on to targets with printed images and other, even more realistic training aids. These will get you used to firing at real people so that you do not freeze up when the time comes. Mentally preparing yourself for a time when violence is your only option is just as important as training to shoot. Just as you cannot hit a target if you cannot aim, you cannot shoot if you cannot overcome your fear. Some fear is a normal thing, and it can be used to keep you alive and aware, but it must not rule you. you can control your fear, overcome your reluctance, and fight for your life. Chapter 19, Courses of Fire. The following courses of fire are training drills to teach you simple shooting skills. These are the skills you're most likely to need in a self-defense situation. Practice them as often as you can so that you can learn to shoot quickly and accurately. You'll be making four types of shots: single shots, rapid shots, controlled pairs, and hammer pairs. Single shots are one at a time, with a chance to put the pistol down and rest your arms before the next shot. Rapid shots are made in sequence, reacquiring the target after each shot. Controlled pairs are two shots made in quick succession, aiming before each shot. Hammer pairs are two shots made almost instantly, aiming only before the first shot and keeping the pistol as steady as possible for the second. Course of fire number one, 25-meter, untimed. 20 rounds, single shots from the 25-meter line. 20 rounds, controlled pairs from the 25-meter line. This is work on basic marksmanship. Aim before each shot and remember the basics. Course of fire number two, 20, 10 meters, untimed. 10 rounds, controlled pairs from the 20-meter line. 10 rounds, controlled pairs from the 15-meter line. 10 rounds, hammer pairs from the 10-meter line. This is work on closer targets. Remember that speed is important for the hammer pairs. Course of fire number three, 25 to 10 meters, timed. 5 rounds, single shots from the 25-meter line in 2 minutes. 5 rounds, single shots from the 20-meter line in 2 minutes. 10 rounds, controlled pairs from the 15-meter line in 2 minutes. 10 rounds, hammer pairs from the 10-meter line in 2 minutes. This should be used as your test for basic marksmanship. Any shots left unfired after the time is up are counted as misses. Time begins once you have loaded your pistol, and once it ends, does not begin again until you have loaded for the next string of fire. You should hit at least 90% of your shots to pass. Course of fire number four, 15 to 5 meters, untimed. 10 rounds, controlled pairs from the 15-meter line. 10 rounds, hammer pairs from the 10-meter line. 15 rounds, hammer pairs and single shots from the 5-meter line. This is drill-based around stopping an attacker rushing you. If possible, you should set up three targets at the 15, 10, and 5-meter line and fire one set of shots at each target from back to front. The 5-meter shots are known as a failure to stop drill, with the hammer pair firing into the torso, then the single shot at either the brain or pelvis to immediately halt the attacker. Course of fire number 5, 20 meters, untimed. 10 rounds, single shots from the 20-meter line. 10 rounds, rapid shots from the 20-meter line. And another 10 rounds, rapid shots from the 20-meter line. This is more marksmanship practice. This is more advanced as you do not have a chance to rest in between each shot while you are making the rapid shots. Course of fire number 6, 15 to 5 meters, untimed. 10 rounds, controlled pairs from 15-meter line. 15 rounds, hammer pairs and single shots from the 10-meter line. 10 rounds, rapid shots from the 5-meter line. This is to get you used to shooting at close distances. One thing to watch is the difference between point of aim and point of impact. If you zeroed your sights at 25 meters, then the impact might be slightly higher than your aim. The zero will include some bullet drop, but you'll need to aim a little lower than usual to hit properly. Pay attention to the difference so that you know what to expect. As you train more, you can start adding movement, reloads, malfunction recovery, cover, and multiple targets at once. At the beginning, these are unneeded complications when you need to focus on your marksmanship. Once you have more experience with your pistol, you can add them in for the sake of realism. Eventually, they'll become as much a part of your training as the shooting drills. Chapter 20, When to Shoot. For all the emphasis on shooting and fighting and killing, remember that some fights can only be won if you walk away. Having a pistol and the ability to use it well does not make you invincible. In fact, it can make you even more vulnerable if you rely on it so much that you forget to stay alert and become overconfident. A pistol makes a lot of noise each time it is fired, and the sound is distinctive. That sound is going to carry and it will draw attention. After collapse, a gunshot is going to be a call to all of the worst kind of people. Shooting may draw more trouble in than it solves. Getting into a fight is a risk, especially after the collapse. Even when everything is normal, it is dangerous, but it gets much worse if you have no access to medical care. Even a minor injury carries the threat of infection, and major injuries will almost inevitably prove fatal without modern surgery and drugs. If you get hurt, no one is coming for you, except for the ones that hurt you in the first place. Consider that when you are faced with a threat. In the end, it comes down to your judgment. Every fight is a chance that you might not walk away. On the other hand, shooting when you did not need to is less likely to result in your death than not shooting when you should have. The decision and the consequences are all on you. Chapter 21, Conclusions. Choosing to arm yourself is a major decision, with implications both now and after any major survival event. Having a weapon and knowing when and how to use it could very well be the difference between life and death for you and your family. Of course, as we have seen, it can also be extremely useful for providing food and sustenance now and in a survival situation for you and your family by means of hunting. Those who have a firearm and are well stocked with ammunition will be prepared on an entirely higher level than the general population. As we've seen, it's extremely important to choose the right firearm for your personal situation. Not everyone will benefit from the same type of firearm, so it's important to research which one is best for you before purchasing. We've also seen the maintenance of your firearm is vital. It's not going to do you any good in a survival situation to have a firearm that you haven't taken care of. It will be of no use to you and your family if you don't properly clean, repair, and maintain the weapon before your life may depend on it. Taking these little steps now will ensure that you'll be able to rely on the weapon in the future. Keeping these things in mind and learning to use your firearm properly through training exercises and further readings will put you at an enormous advantage when the you-know-what hits the fan. If you can prepare now, you'll be much better off in the future. And after all, isn't that what prepping is all about? Best of luck! Sign up for Robert's mailing list and be notified of new releases and special sales. You can find him on the web at eepurl.com/ZVM11. Now, via the phonetic alphabet, that would be Echo Echo Papa Uniform Romeo Lima /Zulu Victor Mike 11. And rewind this if you need to hear that again. And no spam, he promises. Of course, if you enjoyed this book, please leave a review and let us know your thoughts. Other books by Robert Payne: The Ultimate Prepper Collection, Survival Guides for Every Situation. Prepper's Pantry, A Survival Food Guide. The Survivalist Cookbook, Recipes for Preppers. The Dead Road, The Complete Collection. This has been The Prepper's Guide to Firearms, written by Robert Payne. Narrated by Don Barnes of Red Barnes Audio. Copyright 2014 by RPAC Press. Production copyright 2014 by RPAC Press.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.